This is episode 65 of the Mentoring Developers Podcast. Welcome.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Mentoring Developers. We're excited to have you here, and I think you'll be excited to hear what this episode is all about. This is all about regular expressions. Now, regular expressions are these funny little creatures. We don't really know what they are, where they came from, what are they doing in our world. But we know that we need them. Somehow, we have been told, but we're not quite sure what they're all about and why we should care and why we should learn them, if this is a necessary evil or if it's a wonderful thing. So to talk about all that and to get into details, I decided to invite somebody who has written a book on regular expressions and who is an expert in this field. And I decided that we're going to have a talk and we're going to learn about regular expressions, learn some cool tricks, what's good and what's bad, and let's see if this is something we should care about. I think if you are a new developer or even an experienced developer and you're listening to this podcast right now, you're probably thinking, regular expression sounds pretty dry. And I'm going to guarantee you that regular expressions can be pretty exciting. And I've used regular expressions in my professional life quite a lot. And I started studying them in college. And they're really exciting because they're all about pattern matching. And they can get really complicated really quickly. What we have to understand is regular expressions are here to stay. So instead of fighting our regular expressions all the time, what if we could use them to actually help us in our jobs, to help us accomplish goals that we couldn't really do otherwise, and you know, really look cool in front of our colleagues? That wouldn't be bad. So I think you will really enjoy listening to this interview, this discussion, really, with Reuven Lerner. Reuven has been on the show before, so if you don't know anything about him, go check out the show notes at mentoringdevelopers.com/episode65. And there you will see some links from the previous episodes, show notes and links what he talks about. And you can also get a pretty neat discount on his books. All of that discount code and everything is going to be on the website. Go check it out, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode65. Also, sign up for the email list. I think you're going to enjoy it, and you can ask me questions, and we're going to send you information that you're going to enjoy. There are no ads. There's no marketing. There's no selling, right? I'm not trying to sell you anything. It's just there to help you, and hopefully you will benefit from it, and I would love to hear your feedback. It's always great to know what you guys are thinking. All right, here it is, my interview with Reuven Lerner. Here we go. Hi, everyone. Today, my guest is Reuven Lerner. Reuven, how are you?
I'm doing great, Arsalan. It's great to be back on the show.
It's great to have you back. You were on the show in episodes 13, 14, and 36. So if anybody is wondering who Reuven is and you want to learn more about what you have done, all the wonderful things, and we went into so much detail, listen to episodes 13, 14, and 36. But I still want to know a little bit about, tell us a little bit about your background, who you are, and what you've been doing.
So my background is as a developer, right? I graduated with a degree in computer science, and I started off programming big companies. But more than 20 years, I've been a self-employed freelance developer with my own small company, with the ups and downs in terms of number of people. Right now, it's me plus one programmer who works for me on projects. But really, it's mostly me doing a lot of, especially nowadays, training. Over the last 5, 8, 10 years, I've transferred from doing some development, some consulting, some training, to now it's about 95%, if not more, training. Meaning I go every day to a different company and I teach their developers or their non-developers how to program, usually in Python or using some other related technologies. Now, in addition to that, I do a few other things. I mean, I also have produced, I have some newsletters I put out. I have some books that I've published. I have a service that I recently launched. I'm a busy guy.
Clearly, you don't have a family.
I do have a family. I have a wife and three children who occasionally even recognize who I am. But no, they're great. I mean, I'm actually speaking to you from a hotel, not because I've run away from my family, but because I happen to be just teaching a bit farther away from home in two similar places in northern Israel. So rather than take the train all the way back and take the train all the way back here, so I'm just staying here for the evening. But I'm trying to think. I have two newsletters that I put out every week. One is for people doing training to give them some tips on how to do training, whether it's the pedagogic aspect to it, like how to teach, how to learn, whether it's the business aspect, whether it's the logistical aspect of, you know, do you eat lunch with your students and what things should you bring in your bag, especially when you travel internationally. I also have another weekly newsletter that I call Better Developers, which is mostly, again, for Python people, but not only, talking about how you can improve your skills as a software engineer, especially how I sort of dive deep into all things having to do with Python. So I'm currently on like week 8, 9, or 10, something like that, of talking about threading and processing in Python and how that works. And then separately, I've got my ebooks about Python and regular expressions. And then I've got what I call Weekly Python Exercise, which is a subscription service for pay that people get every Tuesday. They get a new Python exercise mailed to them. And every Friday, they get the answer. Someone actually just recently said to me, oh, that's like sort of subscribing to a crossword puzzle. And I said, well, that is a great analogy, right? It's for people who want to, well, I mean, I don't think there are really any, shall we say, professional crossword puzzle solvers out there. So I'm not sure if the analogy holds up completely, but the idea is that, and my idea, a lot of my work is you want to be fluent in a programming language, much as you're fluent in a natural human language. And the only way you get fluent in a language of any sort, programming, spoken, otherwise, is just by using it and practicing, making mistakes, figuring out where those mistakes are and improving. And it's a lifelong process. It never ends. But there does some component at which you sort of cross that threshold of looking everything up to looking things up occasionally. And that's what I try to help people push themselves across.
That's the right approach. You obviously, in any skill that you want to learn, anything you want to learn in life, in art, science, you have to keep learning. There is no end to learning, right? But you get to a point where you are more confident, you're situated. Basically, you're on your you think you're on your two feet and you know where to go instead of looking randomly, right? If I drop you into a new planet, if I drop you onto Mars and somehow you could survive the environment of Mars, you wouldn't know where to go. But if we had signposts or mile markers and there was a destination and you knew where the good restaurants are and so on, then I think you would be able to then, okay, say, okay, if I need to get to that place, this is the path I need to chart. This is how learning happens, which is something that we all need to remind ourselves.
You mentioned that you've been learning guitar and that you see this as sort of a lifelong thing and something that you can, you know, just keep going and going and going and learning. And I am definitely convinced that anyone who wants to teach, anyone who wants to mentor, should learn something. Because it puts them in the perspective of being, risk of tooting my own horn here, a learner, right? It means that they are experiencing that confusion and that wonder and that putting the pieces together, that it's important to have that perspective if you're going to teach. Because otherwise, it's so easy. I mean, one of the rules that I've come up with recently for myself is anytime I think something is obvious, it means I need to go into in-depth and explain it. Because if it's obvious to me, there's no way on God's great earth that it's going to be obvious to my students. And it's only become obvious to me, as it were, because when I learn things, people say, oh, well, you know, it's just sort of clear. And I realize, no, it's not. And I have to probe and ask lots of questions.
Yeah, learning is hard. So anybody who's listening to this podcast right now is thinking, well, all these people, they say that, you know, this is easy. Just go practice. Just go on GitHub and pick up a project and just contribute. What's the big deal? And everything will be easy. So everything is not easy for everybody. And we empathize with that, especially people who are in the mentoring business or in the teaching business. We know yes. That it doesn't mean you're dumb. That doesn't mean that you're not smart enough or good enough to do this. It may be the way to you learn a different way, and that's okay. We should all be able to bring our own differences into the mix and find the path to success. Most of us, I believe that most people who get into development, they can be really successful. You know, you don't have to be the Eddie Van Halen of programming, right? But you know, right. But you could be, you know, know, you could be the guy who can hold a song together, right? You could be somebody who could get the job done, and you could be somebody who has a rewarding career and everybody's happy with. We don't all need to be superstars or rock stars, as they say. And that's a term that I don't like when they use it for programmers. I like it when they actually use it for actual rock stars, but I don't like it when they use it for programmers, because what they mean is somebody who is going to come in and solve all the problems and everybody else has to work around them. And that creates a problem with that person being elevated above everybody else. And I don't think that's a good team environment, personally. But I see a lot of companies looking for rock stars. I'm like, if you have a half a dozen rock stars working for you, good luck.
I see. I guess I never thought about like the rock star skill set coming also with the rock star ego. But right, they do, I guess, come hand in hand. Because I was thinking, well, you know, you have rock star programmers and that's to manage them. And I guess your point is, yeah, exactly. Then someone has to manage them, and that's not so easy.
Yeah, I think that we overemphasize and we put too much importance on skill set, the raw skill set, the brain power, the capacity to calculate things and to come up with correct solutions or to solve complex problems. That is a valuable skill, but is far less valuable than a cohesive team that works well together, because most problems that we solve are not really rocket science. They're not.
That is absolutely right. I'm reading this book now about the history of the iPhone and how it was put together. And one of the points of the book is that everyone thinks Steve Jobs sort of woke up one day and said, I got to make an iPhone. And somehow he waved his magic wand and a few people worked on it. And the hundreds and thousands of people who each contributed over 50 years to the technologies, they didn't want to show Steve Jobs even at Apple until it was a little like more than half baked, and on and on and on. And part of the point of the book is to show it was not just a team effort, but a massive team effort. And it's unfair to say that it was the brainchild of one person or even a handful of people. And those people needed to work together. And unlike Steve Jobs, famously did not work well with other people unless they were on the receiving end of his yelling. A lot of these people just needed to work together and grind and grind and grind as a good team to get good stuff out, which they did. Very impressive.
Yeah, most of the times when you have a good product, a good successful product, it comes together not because of a brilliance of a single mind. It never is like this. You might have the beginning of an idea, you know, some brilliant scientist thinks of an idea, but the product that comes out is always a collaboration, always. And even if a brilliant person could come up with a prototype, you still need to productize it, and then you need to support it. And so if you are in the business of making money through software, then you really don't need a lot of rock stars. You need people who can get the job done, and you can have people with different skill levels. So somebody who's really good at solving complex problems, and somebody who's really good at maybe thinking about the overall design and thinking about the user, somebody who's very good dealing with customers to actually understanding their problems, internalizing them, and making sure that the products that are being built or being supported are in line with what the customers want, right? So everybody has a role, and when a new person comes into a job, I've seen and I've worked with some programmers, some new kids, some college kids, and some even high school kids that are really smart. They're smarter than me. It's obvious to me that at that age, I couldn't do the things that they did. And they come with this, you know, attitude that I know everything, which is... I see that all the time. They're not quite rock stars in, you know, if you look at their resume, but they have that attitude. And sometimes that's good because they're very stubborn and they're going to go in and they're going to stick to it. If you give them a problem, they don't know anything about it. They're going to pretend to know it. They're going to keep banging their head at it and they'll learn. You know, I've been in situations where I've mentoring a group. Right. I used to run a mentorship program in a company out in Chicago, and I would have a batch of people who would just come out of college, and I'll train them for a month, and then they'll start working on real projects. So, and there was this one kid who was clearly brilliant, and he wouldn't accept, you know, anything that I was saying. So I would ask a question just to see how much everybody knows, and he'll give me the wrong answer, but he'll be like, I'm right. You don't know what you're talking about. I didn't know how to deal with that. But after a few years of working, he was, you know, he was a standout programmer. He got really good, and he learned the things that he didn't know. But from a technical point of view, he was very good. So there's room for people like that. I don't want to dismiss those people to say they can't work in software. But there's also other people who constantly struggle. And I used to talk to them and they would tell me that how much pressure, how much stress they're under always.
Yes.
That happens. So those people, they eventually, they left the company or they had a really bad taste in their mouth. And some of them would have switched careers. Some of them went into management. Some did something else. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's the right thing to do. But they don't have to be. Most of them could make it. If we just created an environment where different types of people thrived. Anyway, that's the main... That's how what I believe in. And a lot of times on this podcast, that's what we talk about. But today, I really want to talk to you about regular expressions. Because you love talking about it and you're the regular expression expert and you wrote a book on it. I mean, you literally wrote a book and you gave me a copy of it before the interview and I was going through it. And I was expecting, you know, like a 30, 40 page, a little reference book with just a couple of points. But I was like, this is like learning a language. It was deep. It was very detailed and the examples were amazing. And I was like, if I could do exercises in this book, then, you know, I would feel very confident that I'm one of the best in, you know, among the people, among my peers. Now, I've always been interested in regular expressions, but I always keep forgetting, okay, how does the syntax for grouping work or backtracking? And I always keep forgetting, but it doesn't bother me because I know I'm just going to look it up and I'm going to figure it out. If I have a good editor where I can try a few things and then see the answer, right, I'm going to figure it out. So it doesn't bother me. So you did write a whole book on it. And I wonder, this information that you're giving out in the book, and maybe you're also teaching, I don't know if you're teaching, you're not teaching a course on it.
I do actually have a regular expressions course that I give at companies. Not super often, but like once every 2-3 months. And it's actually a 2-day course, believe it or not. and people scoff at this. They're like, I remember I spent this to one woman at a company I teach at. And she said, that's ridiculous. All you need to know is dot star. That works for everything. I sort of, you know, slapped my forehead. I thought to myself, okay, she needs the course.
Yes.
But there's definitely this attitude among people of, you know, regular expressions are this thing that you sort of look at a manual page once in a while and or you search on Stack Overflow and you get all the answers you need and you move on. And you can live your life that way.
The question is why write a book and why should I read a whole book and understand? So here's the thing. I can go through the book and learn the syntax, learn the different conditions, then do the exercises, feel pretty good. Okay, I know regular expressions. I'm pretty good at it. And then a year later, I don't remember any of it. Is that really possible? Or do you think there's a way to avoid that?
So first of all, possible, right? The world is a big place. And so there's really people who will read the book, preferably even not just read it, but like go through and do some exercise and all the exercises and then not use things for a year. And then they won't remember very much. But the book isn't aimed for people who are not going to use it for a year. The book is aimed at people. And I think most programmers deal with some quantity of text. I mean, a ton of the people I work with deal with log files, right? Searching for stuff in log files, searching for stuff in all different kinds of fields, searching for stuff in inputs they get from users on web applications. And in those sorts of situations, regular expressions can be invaluable. And I think it's also like, I mean, I am super not handy, but like I do like to cook and we have all these different, we just got a new set of kitchen knives, right? And so I've been seeing sort of how the different knives work. And now that I have these tools and I'm like, oh, I can use this knife in this way. In ways, it opens my eyes to solving problems that I didn't even think I had before. And so my belief is that once people learn regular expressions, they'll no longer see it as a to look up and use in solving a problem. Rather, they'll have this tool in their toolbox that they'll use and want to use every week, every other week, every month. And if they do that, they might not remember 100% of the syntax, but they're going to remember a ton of the syntax. And certainly, they'll remember much more having done exercises than by having read a manual page and promptly forgetting that. That they'll definitely forget, I'm sure.
So I'm glad that you gave that answer because that's what I was looking for. So that was kind of tongue-in-cheek when I said, you know, why do you need... Because I'm trying to get into the mind of my listener. This is what they're thinking. Yeah, regular expression is like one of those things where you have to use it in certain situations, but you try to avoid them. That a lot of people think like that, but that's one more tool in your tool belt. And if you have that tool, a lot of your problems will go away. A lot of your parsing problems, but non-parsing, sometimes in every programming language, you come across these situations where you could create an elegant solution with regular expressions. And in one of my jobs, I was parsing these really large text files, and they were random formats. Not really random, but there were different formats of text files. And they needed to be parsed in a certain way and normalized, and you needed to create a word dictionary and to figure out where every word is, and then to be able to filter out the common words and just keep a list of important words and see where they are. That was the project. And how do you do that without regular expressions, right? It's an impossibility. No,
it's theoretically possible, but come on, no one wants to do it, right? And when you see the regular expression solution, then you're just like, I can't believe I thought about doing it any other way. This is so much shorter.
Right.
Yeah.
So I ended up with a regular expression that was 6 lines long. But that regular expression parsed all of the different formats of all of the, so those were those legal transcripts. So when you go in and you're in a lawsuit and somebody's taking notes, and then you're doing it, I think it's not called a testimony, I think it's a deposition. So if you're sitting in a legal deposition, they're typing in their whatever deposition software they have, it produces a transcript. And so those are all different. But that 6-line regular expression was able to parse all of them and create a single result that was normalized across all of them. And the reason I was able to do that, well, okay, so it wasn't 6 lines of text that just curled around. It was 6 substrings. So what I would do is I would think about, okay, how do I break this problem down? I'd break it down into, let's say, 6 different parts, and each part is a substring which represents a regular expression, and you concatenate them all together to create the final thing. So you name it, you know, that's one of the problems with regular expressions. Because they're terse, that also means they are hard to decipher if you're looking at somebody else's regular expression. So if it's just an inline regular expression, then the chances are that the new person will not know the intention. So I was telling you about that problem that I was trying to solve for deposition transcripts. The way I mitigated the fact that I had to use a very large regular expression was that I broke it down into parts. And each part, I gave it a meaningful name and assigned it to a variable. So I would know, okay, this part does that, the next part does that. And then I concatenated all of them at the end and used that in my parsing. So I think that's how I tried to solve the problem of regular expressions. By their nature, they are terse. And because of that, unless you know why you wrote it the way you wrote it, for a new person to come in, or even for yourself to come back to it months later, it'd be hard to figure out what you're trying to do, right? That's a problem that I try to solve by breaking it down and giving it names. Well, how do you suggest we solve that?
So let me first say that many people's reaction to regular expressions is to say, oh, those things were terrible in the 1960s, and they're terrible now, and there must be a better syntax. And perhaps there is a better syntax, but I haven't seen it. And they are terse, they're ugly, they're hard to read, sometimes hard to write. All these things are true, and yet no one has come up with something that's really significantly better. At least not that I've seen, and certainly not that's widespread and across different programming languages. So when it comes to regular expression syntax, you just gotta deal with what we've got, deal with the reality. That said, we can make them easier to read in many ways. Perhaps the most important way to do that is that most languages nowadays offer an extended or verbose option in the regular expressions, that you can break them up across multiple lines, and then you can comment things also. So instead of just having, you know, what looks like line noise, you can have 2, 3, 5 characters at a time with an explanation of what it's trying to capture. And that breaking it up and that commenting really makes it much easier to edit and to understand regular expressions, both that you yourself wrote and that other people wrote. And I really think people would be very wise to adopt that verbose syntax as much as possible.
Yeah, that's good. I didn't know that. So that's great. But one thing that a newcomer to software development or somebody who hasn't done regular expressions much, they might not know that there is no standard regular expression, right? The regular expression language is slightly different in its different implementations. Am I right on this?
Yeah. There might actually be some standard, like some official POSIX standard, and we can all laugh at that, right? Basically, every language is a slightly different dialect. You can think of it as sort of like, you know, American English versus Canadian English versus British English versus Indian English versus Australian English, right? They're all mutually intelligible, and yet they all have their differences that you need to be sensitive to. The biggest one and the most frustrating one by far is whether you use backslashes to make meta characters regular or whether you use backslashes to make regular characters meta characters. For example, in Perl and Python, plus by itself is a meta character. So if you say A plus, that means one or more A characters. By contrast, in grep, plus is a regular character. So A plus matches A plus, but a backslash plus matches one or more A characters. This drives me bananas, absolutely bananas, and I never remember it. And I'm always getting my grep things wrong as a result because most of my time is spent inside of these programming languages where plus is a meta character. And I wish there were a magic solution to that other than a better memory. But I just, quite frankly, I'll just try a really small regular expression in grep and I'm reminded, oh yeah, that's the way that one works.
Yeah, I think there might be some translators. I assume that if you write it in one language, you could translate it into others. Should be an easy. And and I'm just thinking that that program, if somebody wrote it, a translator program, probably uses regular expressions.
Oh my God, I hate to see what those look like. Yeah, but it's definitely when you're writing them, because typically when you're writing them, you're also like trying to solve a problem and trying to do it quickly. And so your thoughts are not toward, well, how can I make this easily maintainable for someone down the road? But you got to, because otherwise you're just condemning them. I mean, I've seen it and I've done it, right? You just say, okay, I have no idea what this thing does. I'm just going to rebuild it from scratch and try to understand it little by little. And that does work, but it's time consuming and it's sad to spend your time and your company's time doing that.
Also, it's error prone because certainly you can try different combinations. You can try to understand it, but a lot of times I can try to understand the intent, but then I would put it in a regular expression tester and I would give it different inputs to see what happens. Just to confirm, what can happen is that you missed a certain special case and it doesn't behave quite as you expected in certain cases, but those certain cases don't happen all the time. It can happen at the worst of times.
Absolutely right.
So I wanted to see if you could tell me in your experience teaching people regular expressions, what are some of the most asked questions that people ask or some of the most persistent problems that you've seen with people's understanding of regular expressions?
Ooh, good question. So first of all, a question that a lot of people ask, if they don't want to take my course, why do I have to learn this? I can just search for it on Stack Overflow. And indeed, that is a technique that many people use. And my answer to that is basically, yes, and you can go to France, if you don't know French, with a phrase book. But your conversations are going to be much deeper and your ability to express yourself is going to be much better if you study some French. And so in the same way, I think people who are looking on Stack Overflow are doing the phrasebook model of speaking, where they're going to be able to pick up bits and pieces and it will be effective, but it's going to be time-consuming, clunky, frustrating, and not quite what you intended. And it's just going to spend time and energy that you could be doing other things. But in terms of like bothers slash frustrates people with regular expressions, I would say grouping is very confusing for people. In part because you're using parentheses for two different things in regular expressions, right? One is to say that a meta character applies to more than one character before it. So if I say A, B, C plus, then the C can appear one or more times. But if I say parentheses, A, B, C, close parens, plus, then that means if the A, B, C is in parentheses and the plus comes after that, then I can have one or more occurrences of A, B, C as a chunk. So that's like relatively people understand. And then you say, oh yeah, and by the way, we're also capturing those things with parentheses as a group. And you can refer to that as group, say, number one or group number two, depending on which parenthesis it is. And that's when you sort of, because they're just kind of, what do you mean we're using these same things for two different things? And what do you mean we can sort of turn off the capturing if we really want and make it look even uglier? So I try, I mean, as I said, the course I teach is typically 2 days long. And I keep groups for day two. After they felt really comfortable then reading through files and searching for the beginnings of words and ends of words and middles of words and, you know, words. One of my favorite exercises is that there's this term called supervocalic. A word, here you can learn some English as well as some programming folks. So a word is supervocalic if it contains each of the vowels in English, A, E, I, O, U, once and once only, and in that order. So I ask people to put together a regular expression that finds all the supervocalic words in the dictionary. And when you see the result, like, it's conceptually sort of refreshing to say, oh, this is how I would describe something that has these things that must appear here and these things that must not appear here. And little by little, you sort of expand your understanding of the syntax. Everyone needs like a favorite regular expression, meta character, right? And so mine is definitely character classes, the stuff in the square bracket. I use those all the time. And so definitely a fair amount of my course is spent instructing people on what they are and how to use them, because I find them to be so powerful and flexible, and even sort of within the regular expression context, readable as well.
So for the benefit of our listeners who don't know what meta characters are, let's define it a little bit.
Good. I'm glad you caught me on that. So in a typical regular expression, let's say my regular expression is ABC, right? So that will match the occurrence of ABC in your string. And depending on how you do it, it might match it the first time, it might match every time. But each of those characters just sort of matches itself. A is looking for the A, B is looking for the B, C is looking for the C, just as a person might do it normally. But if I say A dot C, that dot is a meta character, meaning it's not looking for a dot. It's sort of a placeholder. It's sort of like at a Unix or DOS command prompt when you use star, like star.txt. You're not really looking for star. You're looking for anything and then txt. So a dot is one of the many meta characters you have in that it tells the regular expression engine, I'm not looking for this, I'm not looking for this character. I'm looking for a set of characters that it describes.
Right. So this is where the power of regular expressions comes from, because without meta characters, we'd just be writing exact phrases.
Yes.
It would just be a regular search at that point. So this is where, you know, regular expressions are fascinating, but they're intimidating. And as a new developer or somebody who is just getting into programming and you're like, oh, why do I have to learn this? Take your time with it. Don't have to learn the whole thing at once. So I'm going to ask Reuven right now for your benefit. I'm going to ask Reuven to give you the three top regular expression tricks or techniques that you can learn right away. You can learn within a day or within a couple of hours, and you can grasp it, and it will actually take you from zero to, let's say, 30% of regular expression mastery. I'm going to give you that challenge, Reuven.
Ooh, that's good. Okay. So I'm going to cheat a little bit and have three categories of things that people can learn pretty easily within a day.
All right.
So the first category is the simplest meta characters, meaning dot, question mark, plus, and star. If you could figure, so dot matches any one character except new line. Plus means one or more occurrences of what comes before it. Star means zero or more occurrences of what comes before it. And question mark means whatever comes before it is optional. So if I have A, B question mark C, then that B question mark means that B is optional. It can appear zero times or one time. And so now you can either match AC or ABC. If you master those meta characters, you've already gotten in the power to describe a number of different, many different sort of patterns in your text. For example, you can match in many cases, not all, obviously, but singular and plural versions of the same word. Right? So if I say, you know, a book and books, so you can say book S question mark, and that means it's going to match either book or books. So that's like category number one of thing that you can learn. Number two is you can and should learn a little bit about, as I said, character classes, right? These sort of groups of characters that you want to match. So I want to match all the vowels. I want to match all the digits. I want to match all the capital letters. I want to match all the lowercase letters from lowercase versions of the last 10 letters of the alphabet. Things like that. If you can get even some very, very basic character classes under your belt, that will also give you a huge amount of power. And the third thing is not directly regular expressions itself. It's how the regular expression engine connects to your favorite programming language. And that I've also found, now that I think about it, is a challenge for people. Like, even if they get sort of how to use regular expressions, now what? So every programming language has its own way of writing a regular expression. Do you write as a string? Do you write as a special object? Do you write in special characters? What sort of operator do you use to run the thing? And then how do you get results back? Do you get it back as an array? Do you get it as a list? Do you get it as a dictionary? Do you have to iterate over it? And learning that is also crucial, because it's not enough to know the regular expression engine itself. You have to know also how to put stuff into it and how to get stuff out of it. You could definitely, unquestionably, learn all three of those things within a day. I will even toot my own horn again a little bit. I have what I call my regex crash course. And I use the sort of traditional Unix version of calling regular expressions regexps with a P. So it's regexp crashcourse.com. And we'll have a link to that also in the show notes, I guess. And that will give you an email course where every day you'll get a little tidbit of learning regular expressions. Actually, every other day you'll get a new piece of information. On the odd days, you will get exercises that you can try to use to help yourself out. And little by little, you can get it. And I also just want to agree also with what Arslan said, in that it takes a while to figure it out. Even if you're getting it drip by drip, even if you're trying it, like, and it's very intimidating at first. I have very clear memories of trying to learn regular expressions back in 1988 and being horrified and panicked and scared and saying, well, who needs these anyways? And it was only a few years later when I started learning the Perl language, which basically required you to know regular expressions in order to use the language, that I really learned them.
And once you know it, you'll be a different programmer. I wanted to say you'll be a different person. I realized, well, probably not a different person. But you'll be a different programmer. You'll be like, yes, everything is possible now. Because now, not only that you can find things in a bunch of text, you can find the information that you're looking for. You can. Am I breaking up again?
Yeah, you broke up again. But now I hear you.
Okay.
You're making a point, and then I lost you.
Okay. So what I was saying was that this gives you some. A degree of a superpower. I don't want to say it makes you a super programmer or a rock star programmer to know regular expressions, but it will definitely give you the sense that you can do a lot more than you could do before. It'll give you the sense of accomplishment. You'd be able to look at a piece of text and look at a whole bunch of data and extract the information that you need. You'll have the confidence that you can do it. And you'll have the confidence that you can replace text. That you can, we didn't talk about replacement, but that's also a very useful use of regular expressions where you can transform text, right? And you'd be able to do that if you have the confidence that you can do it. And one of the ways of getting that confidence is practice. And that's where your book comes in. You wrote a book about regular expressions. Practice makes regesp. Well, I was going to ask you a question before you tell us about this. Because I always call it regex. Do you call it regex? Because that's probably more logical, but it's hard for me to say regesp. Regex.
So... I managed to write a book on a subject that people hate, and simultaneously make the title unpronounceable. It's a fantastic combination of talents there, I must say. So, yeah, I mean, I sort of grew up in the Unix world where, especially in the world of Emacs, where everyone called them regexps, R-E-G-E-X-P. And, I think now the programming world is just sort of divided. And it's old timers like me who call them regex, and the younger hipper crowd calls it regex, which actually sounds kind of cool, but I'm a stubborn stick in the mud.
All right, everybody. So that's how you're supposed to say it, regexps. I can never say it. I'm just going to call it a regex. Okay. So tell us a little bit about that book that we started this episode with this book. And so people can buy this book, right? This is a book for sale.
Yes.
Right. But you also have this email course. If people will give them this information at the end of this episode, where they can go and sign up for all that stuff. But you have an email course where people can give you their email address, and then you'll send them emails on like a couple times a week, something like that?
Every day for 2 weeks.
Okay.
You'll be sick of me, yes. But you'll love Regular Expressions.
That seems intense, but okay. So for 2 weeks, Reuven will send you an email, and it'll be like a problem solution type deal.
Yeah, so on like, you know, so days 1, 3, 5, et cetera, it introduces an idea. On days 2, 4, 6, et cetera, it has exercises to try out what you learned the previous day.
If you're in college right now, or if you're studying computer science, you absolutely have to sign up, because when I was in college, if I had something like this, I would love it, because questions, answers, you know, doing assignments, that's kind of thing we do in college. And this is a skill that could help me immensely, right? So if you're a student and if you have any interest in programming, I urge you to sign up. But what else? I mean, who else can benefit from this?
Look, again, I think any programmer who is dealing with text, so that means database people, it means web people, it means automation testing people, it means system administrators. I mean, it's sort of a rare. I mean, so today I was teaching a course to people who are doing machine learning and neural networks on images. They don't need regular expressions, okay? Like they're dealing with stuff that just will not benefit from them. But a very large swath of programmers do. If you find yourself opening text files and looking for things inside of them, the odds are pretty good that regular expressions are going to help you. Maybe not right away, but somewhere down the line.
And I didn't ask you for this earlier, but I'm wondering if you could offer some kind of a discount for our listeners.
Yeah, we could work something out.
We could work something out. All you have to do is get in touch with me, and I'll make sure that you get a discount. So you want this book, you really want it, and you don't want to pay the full price, let me know. Send me an email. My email address is... what's my email address again? I forgot. Okay, it's us@mentoringdevelopers.com. I monitor that email myself, and ask me for a discount for any of the books that Reuven asked, and I'm going to ask him nicely, and hopefully he'll give you something, right?
Yes, absolutely. It would be my pleasure.
So
I mean, look, the fact is, like, I do write these books as a business. At the same time, it gives me an incredible sense of joy to know that people are learning and benefiting from and being able to accomplish more and get better jobs as a result of learning these skills.
Yes. And I can vouch for the quality of the book. I read the book myself, and I think I didn't go through the exercises, to be honest, but I went through it, I skimmed through it, and I think this is one of the best books you could find. Definitely very well written. And the reason it's well written is because Reuven has been in the teaching business for a long time, and he knows how to teach. So he can definitely be a good guide on your journey to learning regular expressions. But before we close, so I want you, Reuven, to give our listeners some advice on maybe how they can tackle this regular expression monster if they were not really ready to sign up for your email course yet. Give them one advice on that. What can they do? Where can they look?
So there are a bunch of different sites out there that offer information about regular expressions, and I would divide them into two categories overall. One is sort of informational, instructional. And there's actually a really good, if very dry, site called regularexpressions.info. So it's regular-expressions.info. And that site has extremely comprehensive information about every language and what its quirks are. So if you're starting to program in JavaScript and you're sort of curious to know what does JavaScript offer in terms of regular expressions, that might not be a bad place to go. It does require, like,
it does require some knowledge, but they actually have what they call a quick start, and they have a tutorial. So you can go through that quickly and sort of get some basic information, see what the benefits might be. So that's like one kind of site. The other kind of site are, there are probably about 5-10 of these out there, maybe even more, of regular expression sort of live testing sites, where you enter your regular expression and you enter the string, and you'll see the matches highlighted in the window. And so that makes it easy to sort of have a regular expression laboratory, as it were. One of the things that's hard for people when they're programming is you enter the regular expression, you enter the text, and you run the program, and then you hope it works. But if it doesn't, then you're stuck sort of wondering, well, what did it match? You can go into these things. So, I've seen like, you know, regex 101, I think it's one that's very popular. What else is there? There's regular, which I think is regular. Oh, I don't even remember. There's Pythex. Rubular. That was the one I was thinking about before. Rubular, which is for Ruby stuff. And you have Pythex for Python-style regular expressions. And everyone seems, this is like the new Tetris, where everyone, I mean, Tetris was this really popular game when I was growing up that everyone felt obligated to implement their own version, except for me, it would seem. And so now it seems like, you know, all the cool kids are implementing their own regular expression highlighting websites. But they're actually super useful.
Yes, and they come in really handy, because that's what I was talking about earlier in the interview. That's the first place I turn to when I encounter a new regular expression. I want to see what's going on, because I can try to decipher it, but you really need to run through some input scenarios to see what's going on, especially if you're developing a new regular expression. They are indispensable. If you're on Windows, you can get these Windows programs that do that for you. You don't need a website, but there are several websites that do an adequate job. But you want to be careful. If you're developing in Java, it's probably better to get a regular expression tester or a regular expression program that works with Java specifically, because there are some differences. Although if you're just learning, it wouldn't matter so much. But if you're trying to implement it in a real project, you can find a tester that works with that platform. Just a little tip. So now, before we close, I think this has been very useful. I really enjoyed talking to you, Reuven, especially, I can sense that you really care about people. You really care about teaching. This is not just a business for you. This is a lifestyle for you.
Absolutely. I mean, people are sometimes surprised that I teach sometimes even 5 days a week. And they say, don't you get tired? Like, I mean, teaching 8 hours a day. Granted, there's, you know, lunch breaks and things. But it really excites me. It really makes me happy to be interacting with people in this way, to be helping them, and to really see them advance, that when they're done with my course, either they put on a good show, or they really have learned things that they can use to improve their work. And I get email from people from around the world. I encounter people when I'm meeting them at their companies, and they'll sometimes come up to me, and it just makes my week, you know, it just makes my month to get feedback from people like that, like, I couldn't do this, and I took your course. And so, it's a fantastic, fantastic feeling.
It is a feeling. It's a great feeling. I've done that myself, and we are all in this business of mentorship and teaching because we care about our audience. We care about the people we influence, because it's, you know, everybody wants meaning in their life. So that's why we're doing. And finally, are you going to do something else? Like, are you thinking about doing a video course, maybe something, you know, maybe a YouTube course or something where you teach people? Not in person, but some other way?
Funny you mention that. So I did a few of those. We're recording this now in early October 2017. So in, I think it was July, I gave a few video courses. I advertised to people on my mailing list. It was for pay. And I actually need to release those videos and make them available for people to buy as well. I'm going to do that. I think one was, they were all about Python. One was about objects. One was about functional programming. And one was about decorators, which is a sort of advanced topic, but there's definitely demand for that. So I'm going to sell those. They didn't sell super well, but you know what? I really enjoyed it. I only had 3 or 4 people. So it was great for them and great for me in that we had this really nice, intimate group. I'm definitely going to do more of that. I just need to find time to do it. I don't know when the podcast is going to go out, so it's probably a little too late for that, but I'm probably actually going to do some in late October, like the last week or two of October, I've got to figure out the exact date or two, and I'll be advertising that to my mailing list and probably on my blog as well. And I enjoy it because it lets me get to people who would otherwise not be able. I just couldn't get to them in person. There's not enough time, not enough way to travel. So I'm probably going to do that more and more. I'm still a little reticent to just record courses and put them online, just because I really enjoy the interaction so much. I think that's a really important part of the learning as well. But I'm probably going to have to give in and just do that at some point, because there's no way for me to really reach as many people as I'd like to otherwise.
Right. I've been thinking about this as well. I like to teach beginner programmers because I like the passion that they bring, and I like to instill a passion in them about programming. So I think that sometimes when you want to reach a lot of people, the only way to do that is through video or audio, but audio is actually very difficult for programming. So video, I think, is a very good way of doing it. But the platform that you use, I think, there, you know, we can probably have this discussion about what platform to use. Do you think YouTube is a good platform, or you think it should be something like just video that you download?
Look, if you're just trying to do video, like for people to watch, sort of one-way communication, YouTube isn't bad. People have hooked me onto Vimeo, so I haven't actually put anything live on Vimeo yet. But I do like the tools that they offer for content creators. You have to pay for it, so it's not as easily available as YouTube. But it doesn't cost that much, and it gives you a lot of control in all sorts of different ways. I haven't even scratched the surface there. I've also been using, like, for my live video courses and for some conference calls and coaching that I do, I've been using Zoom lately, and I've been very impressed. It actually seems to work really well, especially with a bunch of different people. It's more stable than I found Skype to be. So I've been pleased with that. I used Crowdcast a bit and gave up on them, but friends of mine are using them and are very happy. So I don't know if that means I just am difficult or demanding, or it's gotten better, or all of them. I should say, when I'm teaching in person also, I always have a projector that I'm typing on. I almost never use slides, but I do always like to have a whiteboard that I can draw on. And so not having a good whiteboard in these online teaching systems is really frustrating for me. Although, then again, drawing with a mouse, I would be even worse of an artist than I am in person. So, you know, so hard to say if it's a plus or a minus there.
Right. So if you're listening to this podcast right now and you had the chance to check out Reuven's courses yet, if you're learning about all the things he does and you want to give him advice, or you want to ask him to do a particular course, or you're interested in learning more, get in touch with him. He's very easy to talk to, and I think he's going to love hearing from you. How do people get in touch with you, Reuven?
So they could just email me at Reuven, that's Reuven, at learner, L-E-R-N-E-R, .co.il, and that'll be in the show notes, obviously. I'm on Twitter as well, not so active, but I am at Reuven M. Lerner. Those are probably the two best ways to get me. But if you can find other ways, that's fine too. I mean, I'm on WeChat, which is a Chinese chat system, as Reuven Lerner, all one word. So if you're listening to us in China, then you're excited to hear someone mention WeChat outside of there, go for it.
Yes, and if you want to learn Chinese, you can also get in touch with Reuven, right?
Yes, that's my other crazy hobby. Although I just started my fourth year of studying Chinese, and still going strong, still driving my family crazy with it, and still amazed that I can hold conversations in Chinese now, and people actually don't laugh; they actually understand what I'm saying. So that's what we were discussing before about learning something and making you like teaching you how to learn, and that has been a very, very profound. Profoundly humbling and useful experience for me as both a teacher and a student.
Yes, it's always good to keep learning. And it's really good to have the chance to talk to you, Reuven, again. And once again, I encourage everybody to check out Reuven's website and sign up for his email courses if you're interested in regular expressions or Python. And if you have any questions for me, if you want me to do anything very specific in this podcast, or if you have questions that you want to ask me, if you have concerns, send them my way. Email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. All right, Reuven, we'll see you later.
Excellent, Arslan. Thanks again so much for having me on the show.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hi, folks. It's really good to know that you made it to the end of this episode. Did you enjoy listening to it? Did you have any questions that you wanted to ask or maybe some suggestions? Fire me an email at us@mentoringdevelopers.com and I'll see to it that it gets responded. Also, go ahead and sign up for the email list if you have not done that already. Go to mentoringdevelopers.com and you'll be able to sign up for email list. And once you do, I'll send you my 5 steps to success as a software developer and also send you information about salary negotiations and how to get better salaries. And you can ask me any questions you want over there and I'll be able to answer it through email personally. Also, if you're interested in getting a free t-shirt about diversity that I've designed, then go ahead and ask me a question. If your question is good and it gets featured on the podcast, you will be eligible to win a free t-shirt. A pretty cool t-shirt, if I may say myself. Once again, thanks for listening and stay in touch.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.